Yo, 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 Thought Warriors. What is up? Higher Learning is on. It is I, Van Lathan Jr.
And it's me, Rachel Moonlands.
Listen, you guys, if you're watching on YouTube, I want to remind you to do something right now. I haven't been doing this. Please like, share, and subscribe on the YouTube page. We never talk about YouTube.
We really don't.
YouTube. But if you're watching on YouTube, like the show, share the show, spread it all around. All right, I also want to say something else. This whole music thing, I want to challenge the audience to come up with a theme, a Higher Learning theme.
Wait, are we still on? You mean our intro song?
Intro song, yeah.
We're still on this?
I'm on it.
You hate it?
It's not going to work. It's not going to work.
What is it?
And it's not a diss to anyone.
I don't know who made
the song. Do we know who made the song? Is there somebody who made the song?
I have no idea.
I don't think anybody made it. I think they just
grabbed it from somewhere. Actually, wasn't there somebody else who had an idea or who had dropped a song and they wanted us to do the song or listen to it? Wasn't there somebody, Ashley, you had it in the document or something?
It was, yeah.
Play it real quick. Yeah, see this. We got to deal with the song. We got to keep the vibes pure. What the fuck is that big gunk of green? What is that?
It's a smoothie. It's called a glowing green smoothie. I made it.
You made it for yourself?
Gunk of green. Spinach, romaine, celery, apple, pear, banana, lemon juice.
You're coming along.
Excuse me?
You're coming along.
What do you mean?
This is progress for two reasons. Number one, the vitamins will stop you from being sick on the podcast, which is great.
Oh, you think so? Okay.
I think
and
so as well.
And you notice that it's a smoothie. There will be no crunch.
No
I thought
crunch,
about
you'll have
this.
To eat.
I'm doing this for the people.
Yeah. Yeah. People don't, why do you eat on the podcast?
I'm not eating today, so I don't want to talk about it.
I'm just saying, the smoothie is a good way to go.
I skip meals, and not intentionally. And so sometimes I'm like, I got to eat. We're going to be recording for 2 hours, then like driving there and back, that's 3 hours. I haven't eaten. I got to eat. Sometimes I have to run another errand. And I'm withering away. I keep losing weight.
Yeah. We've been talking about it.
Who's we?
Everyone's concerned.
Whatever. You don't want me to eat. You can't eat here.
We've been talking about it. That's why whenever we get together, we try to like feed you big time.
It's
like,
such a
lie. It's true. It's like, man.
It's like so much is going on. I just forget. You know, I'm not a big eater. I'm picky. So I have to be intentional about it.
Like last night, I was going to order some fish from Willie Mays.
Oh.
And I was like, we need to send this Sunday to Rachel. Some meat on her bones. You're withering away. It's crazy. What's happening?
I just told you what's happening. Huh. I sent you what's happening.
Yeah, I know. I know. When are we going to talk about it freely? I'm asking. I'm serious.
You're chomping at the bit.
I'm not chomping. I'm asking, like, when are we going to talk about it freely? Is there ever going to be a time where this whole thing that you're going through, you think it'll be appropriate to discuss it with everyone and let everyone know just what you're going through? Seriously.
There will be a time. I just don't. It's.
Yeah. You have to do the other stuff first.
It just settles. Yeah.
Yeah. It goes away.
It's unnecessary right now.
Yeah, it is, huh? It's getting.
Why are you looking like that? Why do you look crazed?
I'm looking crazed because I know that I've seen the show Snapped before. And I know we're getting close. Let's see. Man, I got a new pair of boots. Fire. Osher skin boots.
You told me you got, what color?
They finally came in. I'm going to show them to you.
Wait, you're wearing them?
No, I'm not wearing them right now. I do, I'm about to wear them around the household to break them in and stuff. Look at this. Fire.
Okay, they really are.
Fire.
They really are. But you can't wear the black hat with that.
Let me see. No, you can't. I got a couple other hats, though.
Okay.
What hat do you wear? What color hat do you wear with it?
Is that brown at the top?
That's brown at the top. And then, you know, you got the ostrich at the bottom. So
I mean,
what?
If you wore all black, you could set it off with
the
black hat.
I don't
want to
do that. But I want to wear like what you like the cream hat or
the cream
deep brown
will go
hat.
With it. Deep brown. Even maybe that color.
Yeah. That's, a tan.
I mean... I like this. And for the people who keep saying, I feel like I see people who are like, what's up with the hat? They even write me, I'll post, and they're like, uh-huh. What's up with the hat? Guys, it's here to stay. I'm with it. It's your look.
Mm-hmm.
You wear well.
Right.
Enough.
I just have, for everyone enough. That's for everyone that's asking the question, I'm sure you guys are probably asking, like, what's up with the hat? The response is very easy. Get off my dick.
Ashley, well, do you have the song?
I'm wearing a cowboy hat. I like wearing a cowboy hat. Makes me feel good to wear a cowboy hat. I'm not asking you about what you wear. These are my nuts.
Okay.
Get off my dick.
Let's press play.
All right, go.
Let's press play.
Go ahead and give us play on the song. We're going to cook up our own joint. You know what I'm saying? Some crazy shit.
Are you gonna be offended if it's not well received?
No.
Let's give it a rating.
10 out of 10.
Because you love the sound of your own
voice. I love the sound of my own voice. Whoever made that, who made that, Ashley?
It's actually a bop.
Who made it?
Some guy named Lucas.
Lucas.
Message to Corey, and he just...
Lucas, let me tell you something. Lucas, you know how to get ahead in life. We're going to make our own joint. Does it fit with the vibe for the beginning of the show? Probably not. But... we have to find some way to incorporate that into the show. I guess
it could be a segment where, like,
yeah,
something that's just specific to higher learning.
But see, here's the thing that happens. Lucas is like dropping that as a thought warrior right now. But then there's the business is gonna get involved. I'm not gonna lie, man.
Just finish
your not gonna lie, man. That smoothie looked like shit, dog.
There you go. That's better.
That shit looked like some shit that Jabba the Hutt would eat on Star Wars.
Look. Is he green?
Nah, he not green, but he just be eating crazy shit. Nigga, why you put that? You put it in a slave jar, too?
It's called a mason jar.
Yeah. What?
Is that, does it have another meaning?
No.
Okay.
I'll tell you something real quick.
I said it out loud, and then I thought, well.
Real quick mason jar story, though. Real quick mason jar story. I don't know. I probably told this on the podcast before. Before we move on, back to Lucas. I'm digging that song, but as soon as we want the song, Lucas is going to be like, I need $150,000, which is the problem. You know, which is the problem.
But he should fight for. That was good. He should get something.
Lucas, I'm fucking with you. We're going to find a way to incorporate that. I love when all of the thought words contribute to the culture of the show. Have I never told the mason jar story here before?
I don't think so.
I've never told the story before, you guys? Okay, so I had a friend when I was a kid. Right, white kid, and when I would go over to his house to drink, we would drink out of mason jars.
Mm-hmm.
And
what were you drinking? Moonshine?
Drinking fucking lemonade, juice, whatever. They would give me a mason jar, right?
Okay.
And I would drink out of it, whatever.
Just you?
My father goes, when you over to his house, because my dad came over, because one time his brother got his finger stuck in the lock of the door.
Mm.
And they were trying to use butter and all kinds of stuff to get. Sometimes the fucking lock comes off the door and whatever, you try to open it and his finger got jammed in there.
Okay.
So we're putting butter on there. We're trying to get the whole thing out of the door.
Mm-hmm.
And we call 911 or whatever. And when my dad gets home, my dad comes over and he sees us. He's like, oh, the butter was a good idea, blah, blah, blah. And I'm drinking. It's fruit punch. I'm drinking out of a mason jar. My homie's drinking and he's drinking out of a regular glass. And my dad, So we go home and my dad goes, so do they drink out of the mason jars too? And I was like, they say that the mason jars are for guests. And I was like, oh. He was like, oh, huh. So So only you drink out of one. And they don't drink out of the rest of those. He's like, no, those are for guests. And then they have their regular stuff for whomever. My dad goes, don't go over there no more. And don't go back over there. Don't carry your ass over there no more. I don't want to see your ass over there one more time. Stay away from them people house.
Yeah.
Don't go back over there. Catch you back over there, I'm gonna whoop your fucking ass. Stay away from their house. And tell that motherfucker he ain't coming in my house either. I was pissed. I'm like, yo, they got the Neo Geo in that bitch. They got, you know what I'm saying? They got some real shit over there. Got a basketball hoop. They got the whole nine. He's like, Van, I done said it. You take your ass over there again, I'm going to whoop your motherfucking ass. And so I'm pissed off. I'm mad or whatever. I'm talking to mom. Mom was like, well, your dad thinks that they give little black kids that come over mason jars to drink out of. And they drink out of there. They don't want to drink behind y'all.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, nah, no way. That couldn't be the thing. But I just thought about it. Have I been a mason jar ass nigga? A slave jar drinking nigga?
Could you have asked somebody else? Like another who? White friend that went over there?
I never saw any other white friends over there. They lived in a black neighborhood.
Mm.
They lived in Gardier where we were. So there weren't that many white kids.
They lived in East Baton Rouge.
Well, that's what you mean. East Baton Rouge. That's where I live. Gardier is in East Baton Rouge. East Baton Rouge is a parish.
Mm.
You know what a parish is?
Yeah, like a county. But I thought it was like a city.
East Baton Rouge is a city. No, East Baton Rouge is the parish. And then Baton Rouge is the city.
Gotcha.
Because there's West Baton Rouge as well.
Gotcha.
And so I was forbidden from going over there. And I never got to the bottom of it.
It still haunts me to this day. So this was triggering.
I looked at it and I'm like,
I'm still serving you out of a mason jar.
Yeah, you're going to serve me out of a mason jar. I never got to the bottom of it. Maybe it could have been right, but like my dad was so triggered by it, I never got a chance to like really like properly litigate it.
You know he was right though.
He probably was.
He was right.
He probably was right. Oh, mason jar fucking serving motherfuckers. Shout out to my nigga though. I wonder where he at.
Is this the same house that offered you the nigga toes?
No, that was different.
You went through it as a child.
That was different.
From racist house to racist house.
The problem is, see, this is why I don't understand all of these people that say they never experienced any type of racism. This wasn't from the Ku Klux Klan whites. This was from the regular white people. This was from the regular white people that you just casually got some racism from them. It's just kind of what the thing is.
It's like a little bit more overt. Like I would experience, like my best friend who when I was young was white, and her grandmother would say, do you not have any white friends? Like that kind of stuff. Racism, sure.
Nigga.
But she didn't say it to me.
What do y'all be on?
She didn't say it to me.
That's serious and overt and direct racism.
She didn't say it to me. She said it to the friend. And when she said it, I was like, why is she concerned about that? No, that's.
Oh, no.
But.
See, that like, no, y'all see, that's the type of shit.
It was racism, I'm saying it was.
I know, but that's the type of shit to where if you can't recognize that,
mm-hmm.
Like, why is she saying that? She not saying, she don't want your ass around. And my daddy and my mama had a little, oh, we see, the nigga toes thing was just crazy. That was an old ass man.
That's a wild. He had you give them to him, right?
Yeah. He was cool as shit, too.
I bet he was.
He was a good dude. Used to talk to him all the time. As long as
you stayed in your place.
He was cool, but I also do think that, and if you guys don't know the story, if you weren't around before, just to let you in. I had a friend, and when I would go to his house, I would talk to his grandfather. His grandfather was very taken by me, always wanted to talk to me.
See that right there.
It's true. I think he was surprised at the fact.
He's a smart one.
He's a smart one. I think he was surprised. I think he tokenized me in a way. He was taken by me. We'd always talk, Van, come on, Van. Let's talk about, we talk about LSU football. We talk about, I don't know, Bill Clinton. We talk about all kinds of different things. I would regurgitate stuff out of the encyclopedia that I read. He'd tell me about World War II, all of that stuff, whatever.
You were a toy.
And probably. And then one day there was some Brazil nuts that were on a little seal, because like he would be in the den and there was like a little thing between the den and the kitchen. Some Brazil nuts there, and he was like, "Van, when you come back down, hand me that bowl of nigga toes."
I just can't. How old were
17, 18, something like that. It's like junior or senior year, probably. I think a senior. Hand me that bowl of nigga toast. I was like, and I just looked at my homie and I was, and he was like, and I just left.
You didn't hand him the ball.
Nah.
Okay, good.
Nah, I wasn't giving you the nigga toes, man. I was leaving. And I'll tell you one thing. Boy, did Terry Lathan have fun with that one. That's your problem. See? I'm like, nigga toes. Ha. You always want to be up in some white people's house. Down there watching. What you watching? What'd you watch? Monty Python? That's what y'all be looking at? Well, you always talk about some Monty Python. You Python your ass out the motherfucking people's house. Some nigga toes. You should have gave them to him. My dad would always just fuck. You should have gave them to him. Like, everybody's the same, right? You over there, you want to watch Monty Python? Watch Monty Python with him. He hated Monty Python. He hated that I would watch it.
I'm not a fan of that movie.
It's not a movie.
It is a movie.
No, it's not a movie.
Isn't there a movie with the Monty Python? Am I crazy? Okay. Thank you.
Monty Python.
Thank you.
Okay, see, this is like a...
I'm not crazy. Okay. There's a movie.
There's Monty Python is a comedy troupe that has several different movies, okay? So, like, Monty Python is John Cleese and all of these guys together, and it's Life of Brian, and Monty Python is a comedy troupe. That would be like saying Saturday Night Live is a movie, or like that it's a troupe of comedy together, and the different people inside the troupe make movies. Okay?
Did Vicious they make the Monty Munchausen. Python movie?
You're looking it up.
I'm looking up the movie.
They're movies that Monty Python makes. It's not a Monty Python movie. Do you understand what I'm saying? And that's what I was getting into when I was, Holy Grail. Look at all the movies. Monty Python Projects, Flying Circus, Life of Brian, Meaning of Life, all of that stuff, right? Like, these are the movies. Life of Brian, I was watching it with my homeboys. We were watching it in Mr. Gabauer's class. We were watching it in Mr. Gabauer's world history class, like, during lunch period. Like, during lunch period, we'd go to Mr. Gabauer's class and we would look at the movies.
Python and the Holy Grail.
Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Is that part of the same thing?
It's, the movie is Holy Grail. It's Monty Python and the Holy Grail. It's not, you know what?
Move on. I thought Monty Python was like a person or something. I don't know. Okay. Whatever. Whatever is before my time. Y'all don't know. Did y'all know that? No. Thank you.
Yeah, I had no clue. I mean, look, it's not important. Like, it's not important that you would know Eric Idle or any of those people. It's not important, but it's what I was kind of getting into, and that's kind of what I would watch with the white friends that were in Gifted. And my dad always, I don't know, he had it out for Monty Python. He didn't like it. I have no fucking clue why. He had it out. He thought it was super white,
and he didn't understand why
you would be looking at it. He would come in, and he would be like, what is this? Because I watched Baron Munchausen, which is not a Monty Python movie, but it's directed, I think, by Terry Gilliam, The Adventures of Baron Munchausen. And me and Ebony used to love that movie. We would order a pizza. Whenever we knew that The Adventures of Baron Munchausen was getting ready to come on, we would order a pizza. And then, like, me and Ebony would watch the movie. He hated that fucking movie. It was so weird to him and so odd. And he's like, what are y'all looking at? Like, what the fuck is this? I'm like, this is from the dude from Monty Python, mate. This cut this goddamn shit off. I know Bonanza got to be on. Bonanza.
My dad was into it, too.
It's crazy. What happened?
Into it. We had to watch it every morning. And I'd be like, gosh, again?
It's a good show. They had Hoss.
Big Hoss.
They had Big Hoss.
Lil Joe.
Lil Joe. They had, everybody was on Bonanza.
Okay.
What'd you do this weekend?
What did I do this weekend? Hyde and went to dinner with.
You went to Hyde?
No. I was in hiding.
Oh, you were in hiding.
And I went to, just dinner with friends. That's right. All I really did. Like, caught up with people, went to a birthday party, caught up with some friends I hadn't seen in a while. Chill.
Denver was very relaxing.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Spent some time in Denver. Shout out to everyone from Series Fest. Shout out to Jocko Sims. A fantastic event.
What was the event?
So Jocko Sims, great actor, was on a show called New Amsterdam. And he put on a panel. They showed an episode of New Amsterdam that dealt with health disparities in rural Black America. And then we had a fantastic conversation with some Black female doctors from there in the Colorado area and some medical students. They weren't a part of the talk, but they were a part of the event that were going to medical school there in Colorado. And it was fantastic. And it was great. I learned so much. And I just want to salute Jocko and the people at Series Fest for taking out a part of their programming to deal with such an important topic. It was fantastic. What?
I just remember something.
What do you want?
One of the things that I went to was an event with the Workers' Circle and Black Voters Matter. And it was all about educating and talking about what they're doing in the South to combat voter suppression because it's so outrageous. Like, we touched on it briefly on this podcast, but the laws that are in place in some of these states are wild and people really aren't going to know till it's too late when they go to the polls. So look those organizations up, support it. They're doing fantastic work in regards to educating voters and also combating some of this legislation that's out there that prohibits Black and brown people and poor people from voting.
Yeah, yeah. Very relaxing. That's very amazing. You're doing that type of stuff. You're out there trying to save the world. Look at you. Look at you, Rachel. very relaxing time in Denver. A great people up there, great company. But I was sick a lot of the time. I was very tired.
The altitude sickness.
It's tough.
I got you.
Couldn't fuck with it.
So you can't come skiing with me next season.
I'm not going. I won't go. I won't go. I want to be part of it. I don't want to be cold.
I know you aren't cold.
I don't want to be cold. I don't want to sweat inside of a big. I sweat inside of those.
Yeah,
suits.
You would get hot. You get hot pretty easily. I don't want to
sweat.
Sunny.
I don't want to sweat and have cold. That's my least favorite feeling. Is when you're in something and you're sweating inside of it, and then outside it's cold.
You don't really get that.
Yeah.
Because of how you're dressed, but I really think you would enjoy it.
Yeah, I bet so. I bet so. It won't happen because I was tired the whole time. I couldn't breathe. And I don't understand how Ashley does it. Ashley must have adapted. Ashley has adapted in human adaptation. I think if anything ever goes wrong, that the people from Denver will take over the world because they will be the only ones that could breathe.
You, next time you go.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like you'll go again. You had a good time.
Yeah.
You can, there's a company that you can work with that you can use a breathing machine at night and it'll help you. Like an oxygen machine.
Now what? Now I'm got to fucking get on CPAP.
It's an oxygen. It gives you oxygen at night.
Yeah.
Okay. My friend Whitney uses it every single time.
No, Whitney. Yay sports. Okay, look. We got to go. We're deep into the podcast already. We haven't been in the studio in a second. I don't think we're yakking it up too much. I'll say this. We got Mayor Sharon Weston Broom of Baton Rouge, the Honorable Mayor Sharon Weston Broom, coming on the podcast a little bit later to talk about what's happening in Baton Rouge with the new community, the new town of St. George that just popped up in Baton Rouge, carving out a huge portion of the tax base, about 80,000 people, primarily white, and what that means for the city. We're also going to talk about all the stuff that you guys have been talking about, rap beef, whatever, beefing it up, and all kinds of different shit. All right, on the other side of this break, I think the beef is kind of over. I'll talk about it on the other side of this break. Before we talk about it, I want to take the time to say goodbye to someone. Over the weekend, a young man named Darius Morris passed away. I'd known Darius for a very long time. I played basketball with his brother. Darius, I played at the University of Michigan. He then went on to play for the Lakers for a while. He was a draft pick of the Lakers. He'd been out of the league for some time. At 33, he passed away. The cause of death is unknown. I'm going to say this. I'm not going to move on from it. I knew this man. I had known him for a long time. I knew his brother. And it's sad. Now, there are things that people go through in their lives, and Darius went through some things in his life. and the things that Darius went through in his life were things that one wouldn't want to go through. And one would hope that people that were close to you that you knew wouldn't go through. But what I will tell everyone is this. He had recently started to come to Phil's with me, and he was boxing. And we spoke, and we'd speak quite often. And we talk about what it likes to, what it would look like to live a life that took into consideration who you are, where you've been, and how you can make people around you feel safe and whole, and what it means to bounce back from things that you've done and from places that you've been. And at the point that he was around, he was full of life. When I was talking to him, when I was, you know, boxing with him, he was full of hope. And it seemed as if he had an understanding on what it took to be a comprehensive man moving forward in his life. He was 33. And so I'm saddened. And for his brother, for his family, for everyone around our circle that knew him and knows his people, I'm saddened that that some of the things that he talked about doing and that he didn't get a chance to do them, you know, looking at his basketball career and looking at what he was going to do now, that it was unlikely that he would get back to the NBA, and how you make a life out of that. There was a lot of wonder, a lot of promise, and a lot of excitement there. So, yeah. That was shocking, very saddening, and my heart goes out to his family and to his loved ones and to everyone that knew him. All right. On the other side of the break, rap stuff.
This episode is brought to you by Thomas's.
Thomas's presents Pondering the Bagel with Tom.
Oh, the paradox of the bagel. Tis crunchy yet soft. Tis filling yet has a hole. Tis a vehicle for spreads, but only travels from toaster to plate. Thomas's. Huzzah! A toast to breakfast.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier, thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Okay, I think the beef is over. I think everything is done. I think it's all over.
Why?
I just think Kendrick's goal has been accomplished. You ever see Superman 4, A Quest for Peace?
Just keep going.
I'm asking you if you ever saw it.
I never even heard of it.
You never heard of Superman 4, A Quest for Peace?
No, you know this.
Well, it was just real quick history on the movie. It was a movie that was made by a smaller production company because the rights for Superman were bought, right? And it was like a nuclear war movie. Now, it is routinely fucking regarded as one of the worst superhero movies of all time, okay? Superman fights Nuclear Man.
What does he look like?
What does Nuclear Man look like?
Yeah, I gotta see.
Nuclear Man has like long hair.
Okay.
And he has a cape. And he's made. You see him? You see Nuclear Man? Nuclear Man is made from the DNA of Superman. So Lex Luthor finds a strand of Superman's hair which is in the Smithsonian.
Okay.
And the strand of Superman's hair is like holding two weights together because it's like, oh, look how strong a strand of Superman's hair is. Some kind of way he cuts this, the hair is strong enough to hold the weights, but Lex can still cut it. It's weird. And he takes that and uses the DNA to make a Kryptonian sort of clone, whatever, a nuclear man who's powered by nuclear, by the sun.
Okay. The nuclear story man. Has potential.
Yeah, it was just crazy. Superman decided that he was going to end all of the world's nuclear weapons. He goes, I'm sick of nuclear weapons. I don't want no more nuclear weapons. So he takes all of the world's nuclear weapons and he puts them in a big pile and he throws the nuclear weapons into the sun. Only thing that Superman doesn't know is that Lex put the DNA to Nuclear Man on one of the missiles and he throws it into the sun and then that creates Nuclear Man. And then Nuclear Man comes back for Superman.
Okay.
I couldn't help but think of that movie when I thought about this beef.
Because?
Nuclear Man's ability was to pierce the skin of Superman. And after Superman's skin was pierced, all of Superman's power and everything that he had and all the stuff that he was doing, he got sick, he got fucked up, he got the whole nine. But all you had to do was pierce Superman's skin. You just had to be strong enough to go nuclear on him and pierce his skin. Everyone that has tried Drake before has tried to overwhelm Drake.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Pusha T got Drake. Kind of same tactic. What Kendrick was able to do was to pierce the skin of the Superman, to poke holes in him and let bleed out narratives that people already believed about Drake. Just pierce his skin and let what you already think about Drake bleed out of Drake. And it was done with a cultural aggression.
Yeah.
And a sincerity that I don't think that Drake thought was going to resonate with people the way that it did. Just, this was as much about timing as it was about anything else. We talked about it here on the podcast. Over the last couple of years, Drake has been trying to be the bad guy.
Yes.
Drake had injured himself just enough with black women for them not for them to want to believe things about him. He had injured himself just enough with hip hop fans. He had injured himself. Think about some of the stuff that he did. He had made For All the Dogs, which people called an incel album. He had did the Tory Lanez thing, right? Yeah. The Megan Thee Stallion thing. He had made himself just enough of an op that the timing was right for Kendrick. When he shot at Drake, the timing was right that Drake lost his biggest thing, which is his protection. Because I don't know how much of the stuff that's being said about him is true.
But people are inclined to believe it.
They want to believe it. And there's enough smoke there for them to believe it. The most famous rapper maybe ever, the only thing that you could do was take fame, perception, and narrative and then use it against them. And that's what Kendrick did. And the one place that you put Drake that's probably most hurtful of him is back in the place
back
where people...
Back in Canada?
I'm just saying, back in the place where people are wondering, is this guy one of us? The name of one of these joints is Not Like Us.
I know. Got people bouncing in the club.
Bouncing in the club.
To Not Like Us.
To Not Like Us. Got people... A minor. He dropped... Just to let you guys know, Drake came out and Drake dropped a record called Family Matters. And it's a good
record.
Which
was good. I gotta say it was good.
It's a good record. Allegations in Family Matters of Kendrick, one of Kendrick's kids not being for him, of Kendrick's business partner, Dave Free, having sex with his wife, of allegations of domestic violence against Kendrick Lamar.
Calling Kendrick out for representing black queens, but that's not who he has at home.
That's not who he has at home. His woman is biracial. You know what I mean? And then as soon as this drops, literally a half hour later, Kendrick drops. Like, relentless. We on your ass. We not giving you 3 days for people to dissect your record. We not giving you 3 days for you to be up.
Yeah.
You drop, we drop, which tells me that he knew Drake was dropping this.
Yeah.
Some kind of way, Drake says that he invented the mole. He says that on the next record, the Hard Part 6. But Kendrick must have known that Drake had something coming out because he got in that booth quick. Either that or him and Mustard chefed up a song in 30 minutes.
I think that was part of it because, right. You know, people are like, at the end of the day, the way you just dissected it was beautiful. But in a general sense, people are like, well, Kendrick's a lyricist at the end of the day, and Drake is more of a pop artist. And I think what he did with Not Like Us, I like to think he did do that quickly and showed how easy it is to have a radio hit, how easy it is for him to have a bop. You know, he's more introspective. He's more in deep thought when he's doing these albums. It's not for commercial, you know, consumption, I would say, or success. It's more about like him working through things, or he has a certain message. That's how I take Kendrick's music. And then he came out with Not Like Us, like, I could do it too.
Right.
If I wanted to. I could do what you're doing. I'm doing it my way. This is the way I'm choosing it. That's the message I got by them doing it that quickly.
Narrative creating is not necessarily about what's true. It's about what people are willing to believe.
Mm-hmm.
People are willing to believe that Drake has a penchant for underage women. People are willing to believe that Drake is an interloper into the culture. People are willing to believe that Drake empowers people around him that have weird types of cases. It's a guy around Drake, Baka Not Nice, that is one of Drake's friends, that had a case, and the case was involving him being a human trafficker. Now, part of that was dropped, but that was part of the allegations that were against him. He went to jail for a little bit. He came back home.
And he's still in the crew?
Yes, he's still in the crew.
Okay.
So Kendrick is saying, hey, you have people around you that are doing this stuff, so why wouldn't we believe that you would be party to some of this? Look, I don't think that Drake is having sex with underage women. I don't. There's no reason for me to believe that, right? But I will say this. There's video of the 17-year-old girl and Drake bringing her up at the concert and, oh, you're 17, but look all of this stuff that you have and blah, 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 blah. The seed is there.
The seed is there.
So all Dot had to do was essentially look at the whole culture and be like, is this your king?
Yeah.
That was the only thing he had to do. And he had to do it in a memorable way. That's why Not Like Us is the end of the beef. Because that's the one where people are going to give to it. They're going to bop to it. They're going to scream out the A minor point. That's the one, OV ho. That's the one that's going to actually be a part of people's cultural memory banks because they love the record.
I love that you tap into it being memorable in the memory of it, because it is human nature where we something happens and we forget it very quickly, right? It becomes old news. We move on to the next thing. All these things have been out there about Drake for years. You talk about the 17-year-old. The clue
allegations.
Allegations, excuse me.
Alluding to
the,
all of this
or
stuff.
Or the video.
Rumors,
I mean the
whatever.
Video.
Yeah,
I mean
yeah.
The video. The radio interview or whatever interview with Wayne is circulating around about how he was like, don't come in here and try to jack this culture. Keep it Canadian. That's coming back around. The blackface is coming back around where people forget, put out a new album, you do something else. It's like, okay, like, but Drake's making me dance. Drake's making me wave my hands in the air. With the way Kendrick attacked him, I think this is, it has completely changed, to use what you're saying, the perception. I can't see him any other way. Mm. And I don't know how, maybe next week it'll be different.
Yeah.
But at the moment, I will always see Drake and I will always think of what Kendrick did.
Yeah, I mean, I think Drake's career is going to be fine, right?
I'm not saying it won't, but you will always think about that. It's like there'll be a mark on him.
Look, the most powerful thing, unfortunately, that you can do to somebody is to other them. When someone is properly othered, like you are like not like us. Like, hey, you're not like us. Everybody knows that feeling. everybody knows what it feels like to have somebody go, okay, we're over here and there's this entire thing that we get and we're a part of this thing and it's fun and it's safe and we're safe with each other and you want to be a part of it, but you're not. You're not one of us. You're not in this family. You're not in this group. You're not in this clique. You're not a part of us. You can't be over here hanging out with us.
And you know what it also did? It put Drake on the defense. That's also the problem, I think, with his diss tracks is even the last one. I'm not saying it was bad, but he has to defend himself.
That is the thing. Rachel is right. The Drake comes back with The Heart Part 6, which is some of the best rapping of this entire back and forth. Some of this best rapping, but Drake is on the defense. He's saying things about Kendrick. Drake is on the defense. The thing is, it's to the point where everything Drake could be saying about Kendrick could be true, and everything Kendrick could be saying about Drake could be false, and nobody cares.
Yeah.
There is a cultural trust that Kendrick Lamar has built up with the audience over 12 or 13 years that Drake hasn't built.
That's right.
This came down to the fact that they just don't trust Drake. And the thing is this, there's so much tape on Drake. Metro Boomin.
Oh, yeah. That's
on his Twitter, it's just, you know, Drake was an actor for a long time. And there's just a lot of funny videos of Drake.
Is that what he's putting out?
Oh, my God. Like, Metro put out a video, and there's some homophobia in there. Metro put out a video. I guess there was some tape or movie did where Drake was grabbing a guy's ass and then like, looking like, oh, yeah, I grabbed your ass. There's Drake saying that he's that nigger, and he hits the hard ER when he says he's that nigger. It's talking about somebody else. There's tape of Drake dissing the Toronto lingo that he would go on to adopt later on. You've seen that. So it's almost to a point to where his talent, I'm almost more in awe of it now, because for all of this to be real and for him to have gotten as far as he did, he just had to have overwhelmed the culture with things that people love, with music that people love, with stuff that people love.
So what does that say about all these people who were featured on his album, Kendrick being one of them, who featured him on theirs, Kendrick being one of them? What does that say about those people? What does that say about that all this was out there? This is how he started out. We see what he's become, but it was accepted by it.
Let me tell you something. I'm so glad you asked. Because what it says to me more than anything is that hip hop and rappers are the fakest bunch of motherfuckers I have ever seen in my life. I'm talking about high school girl fake. I'm talking about...
What does that mean?
Talking about the way high school girls always get at each other and talk behind each other's backs. You know how it goes. Don't get it. Yeah, that's fine. I'm talking about like... Real Housewives level fakeness, Beverly Hills level fakeness, Dr. Miami type fake. I'm talking about motherfucker Stevia equal. I'm saying fake as a motherfucker, penile implant fake. Name something that's inauthentic. Hip hop and the rappers that have been in it for the last X amount of years have got to be some of the fakest motherfuckers ever, because they never fucking liked this dude. Never. They never fucking liked this guy.
Yep.
Not only did they not like him, there was a deep-seated resentment for him. And they fucked with it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
A deep-seated resentment for him. And they fucked with it anyway. When the House of Cards came apart, every single thought, every single feeling, suspicion, all of it just rained down on them. And I'm not saying that they're wrong to feel the way that they feel. I don't know them like that. I don't know him like that. But I do think that for everybody that talks about how real they keep it, they definitely weren't keeping it real with him.
Nope.
Because all of these thoughts that they had been germinating for a long, long time.
Okay. Another devil's advocate thing, I guess. I'm not taking up for Drake, but could it be that similar to what I've said, I liked Drake when he first came in because he was representing the lifestyle that he came from. We've seen the transition over the years. Could it be that years ago, when they were, you know, featuring him or vice or being featured on his stuff or touring with him, that they accepted him for being who he is? It's the change that has incited the behavior from these fellow rappers where it's like, well, it's not that we never liked him. We don't like this version of him, which is kind of what I say, right? Like, I like Drake's music, but I don't like this version of the persona that I'm seeing. That could be the case. Before we go on saying how fake everybody is, it could be, we just don't like what he's become.
Yeah. You know, I really would like to believe that that was the thing, but I don't think that it is.
Okay.
I think that a lot of times, not all rappers, but sometimes we look at hip hop and rappers as these are some of the most narcissistic people in the world. They're little economies, all of them. It's all about them. And a lot of times what they're really chasing is just the things that are being rapped about, the money, the fame, the this, the that. And if there's a conduit to that, that they might not fuck with for another reason, they don't give a fuck, right? They don't care. They don't give a fuck about any of the things that are being said about someone. They don't have to like somebody. That's people are like that in general. But from people who claim to be so sincere and uncompromising, to know that they worked, big upped, were around, fucked with, passed women back and forth, partied with someone that they never, ever liked. I give Kendrick respect for never acting like he liked Drake. When he first came out with him, yeah, that's cool. But that shit was really cool. By 2013, he had kind of started to poke at him a little bit. I give Kendrick respect for never pretending like he was down with Drake, for never posing in the pictures with him and getting on the records with him and making the music with him and then come back and telling everybody how much you don't fuck with him after. I give him a lot of respect for that. And it's probably the reason why people take the critiques and the criticism of Drake more seriously when they come from Kendrick, because Kendrick never had to submit to Drake's world or be a part of it to stamp his career.
Mm-hmm.
It was offered to be on First Person Shooter, said no. I don't want to be on First Person Shooter. I want to be on your records. This is the way I feel about you. That authenticity is kind of what buoyed this entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it was going to be hard for Drake to win, because he wasn't really battling Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
Drake was battling a perception that people have of him. And there's too much tape. He couldn't beat it. The question is, where does everybody go from here? And how much damage has been done? And does this spill out into anything else? But once people are dancing the pedophile rhymes about you, it's over. Yeah. And so I'll tell you one more thing. This is the last thing I'll say about this whole thing. There is something that Drake did that I think lends to a cultural misperception that people have. So in one of these records, I can't remember which one it was, Drake talks about how he's bigger in L.A. than Kendrick Lamar. I'm bigger in your own city than you.
Okay.
Can't remember what it was. It might have been Push-Ups. It might have been one of the first ones. Drake does something that a lot of people do all the time. He confused Hollywood for Los Angeles. I want to make sure we break this out, because I want people to Drake confused Delilah for Watts.
Which he shouts out.
He confused Poppy for Compton. He confused West Hollywood for Inglewood.
Mm-hmm.
The people that I seen, the people that I observed bopping to Not Like Us, they was two-stepping to that bitch.
Yeah, they were.
Crip-walking to that bitch.
They were.
That was some L.A. shit. The record is produced by DJ Mustard, a former Drake collaborator. When it was time for people to coalesce in Los Angeles, not in Hollywood,
yeah,
not in Calabasas, not in West Hollywood, not in Santa Monica, not in the places you might go, not in Beverly Hills, not in the places that people from outside of Los Angeles think are Los Angeles, right?
Right.
When it was time for people to coalesce around the record, the people I seen dancing to it was Shamika Nim, Big Ron, Lil CeCe. You know what I'm saying? People like that. People like the people from the fucking Low Bottoms. You know, people that are going to fuck with Dot that are from L.A. People get their L.A.'s confused all the time.
Very true.
So when you say I'm bigger in your city than you, I done been to Delilah a lot of times, seen Drake in there a lot of time. I've never seen Kendrick Lamar in there.
And I don't think he ever would.
Like, but there's nothing wrong with going to Delilah. By the way, Delilah is fucking fantastic.
We go to Delilah.
Yeah, so like, shout out to Delilah, Kenny Hamilton.
I was about to say, shout out to Kenny.
Kenny Hamilton. All right. I'm telling you guys, for all of your needs and all of your good feelings, and literally all of your good feelings and your needs, Kenny Hamilton hit me up.
Happy belated birthday to Kenny Hamilton, by the
to
way.
To Kenny Hamilton. Kenny Hamilton hit me up literally a month or two ago and was like, who from Louisiana can we put on? Kenny fucking Hamilton. Like, he was like, literally, who can from, name me somebody from Louisiana we could put on. Who you like? Let's put somebody on. Kenny Hamilton. And so I'm not going to besmirch Delilah. Great food, great ambiance, great music. All I'm saying is that you can't...
It's sceney.
Not that it's even sceney. I like it in there. But
it
you,
is sceney, but to what you're saying...
You can't confuse Delilah for the GS. The GS Sports Bar. Don't get your LAs fucked up. And it takes sometimes some cultural discernment to make that determination. You know, to make that determination. That's not saying that Drake wouldn't be big in some of these other hoods. I'm saying Dot is of them.
Yeah.
And he took his shit back. So it's interesting to see how people will look at Drake moving forward. But I can tell you one thing. It'll never be like it was.
Not at all.
Drake is still going to sell huge amounts of records and still going to go. He's still the biggest rapper of his generation. But Nuclear Man pierced his skin.
I'm serious. What do you think? Okay, well, in that story, does Superman ultimately defeat him?
Yeah, Superman
okay,
comes
so
back
we don't tell
wins.
That part of the story. But do you think, what do you think is more important to Drake? Because there's a lyric that Kendrick has, and it's in one of the first two, I can't remember, where he says, money, power, respect, the third being the most important. What do you think? Kendrick clearly has the respect, right? We both agree that he won this. Drake, more so... I'm not going to say that about Kendrick, but the point, I guess the point I'm making is, which do you think is more important to him at the end of the day? You say he goes on, he's going to sell records, he'll still be popular, all that's true.
Yeah.
So he'll still have money and power. But do you think...
Latino women still love him.
I saw you write that.
A lot of Latino women have been going hard for Drake. Shout out to the Latino women in the world. Y'all love Drake like
this
crazy.
This affects him because personally, I'm asking you to assume here, obviously, but he's lost the respect at the moment.
Can't get in his head, but I'll tell you this. I think a lot of the acceptance that he's had as an artist for the last 15 years or whatever it's been is because he's been the biggest rap star in the world. I think sometimes he's done things to cling to his reputation as the biggest rap star of the world, as a viable rap star, because that was his entree into culture. He entered culture not as an artist that we watch grow and that we... He entered culture as a unique star.
Yeah, that's very
true. And in
true.
Order to stay culturally relevant, he had to stay that type of star. Like, there's a way that we love Jay-Z even though he's not the hottest rapper in the world.
Mm-hmm.
There's a way that we love Nas even though he's not the hottest rapper in the world. There's a way that we love these people after their star has burned out a little bit. Their importance, their cultural importance buoys them.
It's the respect.
To the end of there, it's the respect. It is the respect. It's the respect that we have for a Diana Ross. It's the respect that we have for these people, right? Because they mean something. They're important to us. I don't know if he has that without the hits. I don't know if he means anything to people. And I think the never-ending search for relevance is probably an understanding of that. It's probably an understanding of, like, I'm like, there's nothing that connects me really to these people, even though there really should be. I just be honest, Drake's musical legacy, we talked about this, comes from Larry Graham, Graham Central Station. It comes from his father, Dennis Graham. It comes from fucking Memphis.
Yeah.
That search for who he is probably a search for his dad. It's probably a search for a part of him that he knows is real, that he hasn't really been able to access. It's probably a legitimate reaching out for a part of himself that he never felt comfortable being, that he wasn't introduced to.
What's the lyric Kendrick says? This is really a battle with yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably all of that. And he's talked about it before. You know what I mean? Like, and so if that's in you, all it takes is for somebody to step on it and pull a bullhorn to it. But I'm telling you straight up, as far as I'm concerned, the beef is over. The record that Drake came out with was good, but it's over now. We can move to something else.
He flew too close to the sun.
Yeah.
Nuclear Man.
Drake will be fine.
Nuclear Man.
But Nuclear Man pierced his skin. You know how Superman beat Nuclear Man?
How?
He realized the source of Nuclear Man's power.
So he got rid of the sun?
Yep. He pushed the moon in front of the sun. He caused an eclipse. He pushed the moon in front of the sun. And when he cut the source of Nuclear Man's power, which also should have affected Superman, by the way, when he cut the source of Nuclear Man's power, Nuclear Man went dormant. He had to use his power against him. The question is, would there be any way that Drake could use Kendrick Lamar's cultural power against him? Is there holes in Kendrick's authenticity?
That's the only way to
Does Kendrick own a private prison?
That's the only way to do
Is
it.
Is Kendrick MAGA? Has Kendrick been fucking on Ann Coulter on the side? Has Kendrick been hanging out with Tommy Lauren?
Yeah.
Has Kendrick been like, that's the way. You'd have to push the moon in front of Kendrick's son and make him go dormant.
Yeah.
I don't see it. All right. Before we get off this, I want to say something real quick before we move on. You guys, I don't like to tell you guys what to watch because it's a very diverse audience.
Okay.
But swear to God, y'all need to be watching the Gerard Carmichael show.
Oh, I'm behind.
The Gerard Carmichael show, I'm ready to call it right now, is one of the most revelatory things I've ever seen before in my life.
Gonna watch it when this is done.
But telling you straight up, it was very difficult to relate to Gerard Carmichael early on.
Okay.
Seemed like a sex addict. Seemed like a narcissist.
A bad friend.
A bad friend. All of that. And positioning him like that earlier on was genius, because the show itself gives to me the most accurate view of a human being, their foibles and their trauma and what creates them, more so than anything I've ever seen. The episode with his father, the episode with his mother, the episode with his friend, you see him on the one hand not show up for his friends, and you see him on the other hand completely dedicate this entire show to a friend and helping him work through some of his traumas and his troubles. Like, I've never seen anyone more unafraid to be a human being on television than Gerard Carmichael. And honestly, it's not always fair to the people that are in the shows. It's not. It's not always fair to them at all. But at the same time, the show ends up feeling like something that he has to do. I'm obsessed with it.
All right, I'm back. I've fallen off a bit, but I'll come back.
Why did you fall?
I've just been busy. I have no real excuse.
Well, you're not trying to fuck with it. Like, you Whatever. Get put off by, it's what are you, a little phobia?
I'm going to the bathroom.
A little phobia? So, Columbia has canceled their graduation amidst ongoing protests at the school.
Right.
it's kind of links itself to our next topic. By the way, I'm going out to UCLA.
You gonna protest?
I'm gonna go out there and check it out. Okay. I need to know for myself. Okay, I need to know for myself what's going on. I need to see the protests and see how the young people are making their voices heard. I need to hear what's at the protest. I need to see it for myself. Listening to reports of it and how they're trying to paint the student protesters and what they're saying about the student protesters isn't good enough for me. I'm going to go out to UCLA. I'm probably going to bring a camera with me and a live mic with me and get this for myself. Okay. Because I want to see. Do you have any interest in going out there and see?
I'll go with you.
Go with me. We'll go out there and we'll see what's going on there.
Yeah, UCLA. I'll go with you.
Now, because of the ongoing student protests that are out there, like the ones that are at Columbia and many places around the country, Tulane, UCLA,
Texas,
so many other places that it's almost too many colleges to name. The young people feel energized. They see an injustice in the world, and they're moving to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's also been a wave of legislation, some of it old, some of it new, to penalize criticism of Israel as anti-Semitism. The House of Representatives last Wednesday voted overwhelmingly to advance a bill that would empower the federal government to crack down on student protests by defining them as anti-Semitism in a way that includes certain criticism of Israel. Now, this bill is being sponsored by Representative Mike Lawler, who's a Republican from New York. And its passage, which we're getting to here now, is indicative of something that's happening larger. A lot of these bills are popping up all over the place. Governor Kemp signed HB 30, which revised Georgia's hate crimes statute to include certain forms of speech critical of Israel. Kristi Noem, the dog killing bitch, signed legislation into the South Dakota Civil Rights Statute that codified some forms of speech critical of Israel as a form of legal discrimination. And some nearly identical bills, South Carolina, Governor Henry McMaster, not Nikki Haley. Florida legislatures are doing the same thing. The important thing about these bills, to me, is the framework that they're based on. And they're based on the IHRA, which is the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance. It's based on their interpretation of anti-Semitism and their ongoing definition of anti-Semitism. And most of these, when you read the doctrine, if you want to go on their site, holocaustremembrance.com, resources, working definition of anti-Semitism. If this is on May 26, 2016, that they adopted this framework, most of this stuff is very straightforward.
Right.
Have you read this?
I'm looking at it now. Yeah, I read it. I was reading it.
So if you look at some of it, it's calling for, aiding, or justifying the killing or harming of
Jews. So you should say that there's an outright definition, which
okay.
is very vague.
Yeah.
And then they provide examples that uh-huh. are... that include but aren't limited to. And it's the examples that people have the issues with.
Very well said. Calling for, aiding, or justifying the killing of harming of Jews in the name of radical ideology or an extremist view of religion. Obviously, no one in their right mind would say that that's not anti-Semitism. Making mendacious, dehumanizing, or demonizing, or stereotypical allegations about Jews such as the power of Jews as a collective, such as, but especially not exclusively, the myth about a world Jewish conspiracy or Jews controlling the media, economy, government, or other societal institutions. All of these. Accusing Jews as a people of being responsible for the real or imagined wrongdoing by a single Jewish person or group or for acts committed by non-Jews. All of this stuff. But then there are a couple of them in here that I think are rightly being criticized and being discussed.
Yeah.
Denying the Jewish people their right to self-determination, e.g. by claiming that the existence of a state of Israel is a racist endeavor. Applying double standards by requiring of it a behavior not expected or demanded by any other democratic nation. Holding Jews collectively responsible for the actions of the state of Israel. Now, let me tell you why that one's important. Number one, you should never do that.
Right?
Holding Jews collectively responsible for the actions of the state of Israel, to me, is the worst type of anti-Semitism. Because it makes people, individuals, responsible for a state action.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is the type of grouping and groupthink that I think reduces the humanity of people. It goes without saying that hate speech and blood libels and things like that are long-held tenets of anti-Semitism. But when you say, Israel did this, so I'm going to take it out on this person or this synagogue or this group of people, you are engaging in some of the most disgusting actions and behaviors that human beings can engage in. That, to me, is at odds with one of these. You can't hold Jews collectively responsible for the actions of the state of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
But then it also seems, by claiming the existence of the state of Israel is a racist endeavor or an ethno-superior endeavor or an endeavor that in some way has led to, and some of this stuff I'm adding on, the dehumanization or the ethnic cleansing of a group of people, you can't say that, and that's anti-Semitic. This framework, to me, is having it both ways. It's saying you can't really criticize Israel for anything that Israel might have done that is racist. And let me say something, make sure people know this. Most countries run by governments do racist things.
Sure.
Most countries run by governments do racist things. The same way I'm an American, the same way I can criticize America for its foundation,
mm-hmm.
for its systemic racism, for the ethnic cleansing that America was a part of in the natives that were here, the genocide of the natives that were here. Telling the story about America is impossible unless you tell the story of who lost so that America could win.
True.
Not being able to hold Israel to that same standard is suffocating conversation around state action. And to see some of this be codified into law is troubling. It's outrageous.
It's almost as if our politicians do not have a clear understanding of what anti-Semitism is and what anti-Zionism is. Like they seem to be conflating.
No. That's purposeful. They're saying that anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism.
Right. They're
doing that very intentionally.
But they took a vote on it in the House, and what, 90-something Democrats?
Yeah.
Voted in favor of it. The way you just explained it, it's like, imagine if we couldn't talk about, it got codified into law. It became a law that we couldn't talk about slavery, that we can't talk about institutional racism. If we can't talk about, we wouldn't even be able to talk about the conversation we're going to have with the mayor coming up.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be able to have those. And that's very vital to our existence in this country. So I can't imagine there being a law that says we aren't allowed to do that.
They're trying that though.
I know. That's what I'm saying. That's what's so wild to me, where is I don't understand how you can, one, be Black and vote for this, but two, just in general, basically to both sides, like you were saying, It's one thing you want to protect Jewish people, and that is exactly what should be. That should happen, right? We should be fighting anti-Semitism. But they're also trying to protect the state of Israel, which is the problem, which is what our politicians keep doing, which is why we have a law like this that could possibly be in place. I do want to say on the other end of it, you read the first one, calling for aid or justifying the killing or harming. That's not necessarily that part's not happening, but extremist views of religion. There are Republicans that are fighting against this too, based on religion.
Yeah. I mean,
the wrong, like
Marjorie Taylor Greene, to me, said one of the most anti-Semitic things.
The worst.
I can't believe she fucking said it.
The worst.
Publicly. She literally said that if this law is adopted, I won't be able to say that Herod handed over Jesus to be killed by the Jews. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, she said that.
Like, she literally...
And didn't blink.
And didn't blink. It's in writing. Like, she literally said that. And so, to me, dealing with the deep anti-Semitism that exists in far-right Christian circles and has existed for a long time is imperative. But to be honest with you, one reason why those circles aren't being called out is because there aren't Zionists a lot of times. A lot of times they believe in the strength and preservation of the state of Israel because it feeds their apocalyptic dogma about what has to happen for Jesus Christ to come back.
Mm-hmm.
So this entire thing has made some really strange bedfellows. But I'll say this. To me, one of the bedrocks of protecting Jewish people is to not see them as a monolith. To me, the bedrock of protecting any people is not to see them as a monolith. Now, it would be insincere of me not to say that most Jews, when polled, support the state of Israel. Okay? I don't know very many people who don't support the state of Israel. And let me tell you what I mean by that. The idea of the existence of Israel, of a place where Jews can be free, of a place where Jews have power and self-determination, isn't an affront that I would know to anyone unless you were deeply anti-Semitic.
Mm-hmm.
I think the way that a country comes about
and
the actions of a nation are just as important as the stated intention of the existence of that nation.
Mm-hmm.
I think America, as being a bastion of freedom or expression, has to continuously be litigated as such.
Yeah.
It's the duty of Americans to do that. It's the duty of Americans to ask those questions. And it's a duty of Americans to ask those questions about America's closest allies and supporters. We have to. We have to ask what we're doing and who we are in the world. We have to ask who's winning and who's losing. And if the criticism is about the state of Israel or what's about to happen right now, or what seems like it's about to happen right now in Rafah, there is an update here, and we'll get to it. If it's about the treatment of Palestinians, if it's about any of the geopolitics that go into the creation of the state and America's relationship to that state from an international sense, we would have to ask those questions. We have to ask those questions, and we have to continually ask those questions, and we have to have hard conversations. But this right here is some of the most odd there are several states where BDS against Israel, boycott, divest, and sanction, BDS movements against Israel are outlawed. This is un-American. And it's weirdly suffocating when we're talking about the conversations that we want to have. Imagine if BDS against apartheid, right, South Africa would have been outlawed.
Right.
There would have been a human cost. Like, I don't understand what the hell.
Well, I would imagine that if this passes through the Senate, that, and this becomes law, that the moment a case happens, it's going to be challenged. It's going to go to the Supreme Court because it's the definition is so general in its in itself, but it also because the whole point of this, right, was to come out because of the protest, right? They want to protect the anti-Semitism that is going on, even though Trump signed an executive order implementing this definition that's from this group already. And Biden has talked about possibly, you know, like changing that executive order. But yeah. This is the whole purpose of this right now is supposed to be to protect anti-Semitism on campuses. Fine. But the way that this is, it also limits free speech, First Amendment. And that's what a lot of people are saying, too. And so I would imagine that if this does become law or this is implemented, then it's going to eventually be challenged the first time somebody's on a campus and says something that's considered anti-Israel or talks about the existence of Israel or how it was formed. I mean, almost a history lesson might go against what this definition is.
Like, is it okay to...
You can't teach it.
Well, is it okay to talk about the Nakba? Is it okay to discuss the Nakba? Is it okay to say that, hey, you know, over 700,000 people had to leave their homes?
You can't say that.
No, no, no. But, I mean...
That's what this would say.
Be good to get clarity on that.
Because you have to say why. So whose definition of why? Why did those 700,000 people have to leave?
Well, there are differing... People do have differing reasons
but that's,
why they
that
left.
Would be
some
my
people,
point.
There are people that say, I mean, once again, I'm reading Benny Morris's book, Benny Morris is, I've actually read the book. I'm finished with the book. You know, if you talk to some people now, there's a great, if you guys have the opportunity, Markle Mahill's channel. There's a great debate between Markle Mahill and a guy named David Lang. When Markle Mahill brings up the Nakba, David Lang says the people left on their own. And there's some talk back and forth about whether or not the people left on their own.
But that's what I'm saying. A definition like this would not have differing opinions. You couldn't have differing opinions.
Right. Some
it
people,
would enact one.
Right. By the way, for crystal clear clarity, they didn't leave on their own.
Yeah.
Like they didn't.
But
okay.
You wouldn't be able to
for
say
crystal
that.
Clear clarity from Van, they didn't leave on their own. But what I'm saying is there are, to me, ahistorical viewpoints that I've read as I've been digging into this that say, hey, they left on their own. And then there are other viewpoints that I say, they left on their own because they were told to leave by some leaders, but they thought that they would be able to come back and they haven't been able to come back. And the right of return for those people to come back is a tenet of Palestinian negotiation in terms of their state, how they see themselves in the region and in the land itself. Look, there is a reality about the state of Israel that is inconvenient, right? And this is the reality. If you were to go to a one-state solution, one person, one vote, Israel as we know it would not be what it is right now because the numbers don't add up. So in a way, the only way to maintain Israel as a Jewish state is to codify it as a state that is a perpetual upholder of Jewish supremacy. Because if you open it up, everybody gets one vote. If you let the people come in, if that was a thing, they would lose Israel. And a lot of the power of the state of Israel, when I say power, I mean cultural power, comes from the fact that it is a safe place for Jews because Jews made the rules. Jews haven't had a safe place. They have a safe place. Jews make the rules. Jews run the government, participation from other people. The IDF is a strong army and all of that stuff. So the existence of Israel in a way is determined by the fact that it has to be an ethno state. Now, there are other ethno states in the region, right? All Muslim countries in the region. Region, a bunch of them, a bunch of Muslim countries. We talk about that. That's a big deal. As it relates to allyship with America and support with America, the question would be, are we allowed to criticize Israel the way we criticize Saudi Arabia? Are we allowed to criticize Israel for rights inside the country in the way we criticize other countries in that region because I'm able to say, hey, you know what? Everybody taking money from the Saudis, you're taking money from the people that killed Jamal Khashoggi. You're taking money from a place where rights for women are a certain way, where rights for gay people are a certain way. And by the way, these are questions that would have to be asked about alliances with Palestinian states as well.
Mm-hmm.
With those questions, once a Palestinian state would be formed,
mm-hmm.
the world would then get to decide how you deal with some of the realities that might exist in places like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not me saying that I'm culturally aware of the ins and outs and day-by-day realities that exist in the West Bank or in Gaza or their cultural treatment of whomever. But what I'm saying is, until they're allowed their self-determination, until they're allowed to have their state, we don't know what type of society that they want to have.
Yeah.
They're not being allowed to have a society. They're not being allowed to have self-determination. They're not being allowed to have dignity. They're not being allowed to have an airport and a seaport and a standing army. They're not being allowed to defend themselves. They're being allowed to do whatever their neighbors say to do, and that's not freedom or justice.
No.
And if you can't point that out, if it's illegal to point that out, not only do the Palestinians not have freedom and justice, but we don't have freedom and justice.
No.
If we can't point that out, talk about that, litigate that, and have conversations about it, whatever the conclusion of those conversations are.
Mm-hmm.
And so this part of it right now, the part of it where we can't discuss it, the part of it where we're told what we're thinking,
yeah.
where we're told what's anti-Semitism, criticism of a state, of a country.
Right.
When we're told that, I don't think that does any good for anyone. I don't think that's positive for anyone. I don't know of the Jewish people that I know, that I talk to, anyone who would say that criticism of Israel is criticism of anti-Semitism. I'm not going to speak for all of them, and I'm not going to speak for the entire Jewish diaspora that I know. But I would say it would be very important that we're allowed to continue the conversation going about the world that we want to see and how we want to see America's allies and friends show up in that world. Because using the letter of the law to tell people to shut up,
mm-hmm.
shut the fuck up, don't talk about this, or else you're akin to a Nazi.
Yeah.
Breathtaking.
Yeah. I mean, well said. I can't even add to that.
Breathtaking. We'll take a break.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
This episode is brought to you by Thomas's.
Thomas's presents Pondering the Bagel with Tom.
Oh, the paradox of the bagel. 'Tis crunchy yet soft. 'Tis filling yet has a hole. 'Tis a vehicle for spreads, but only travels from toaster to plate. Thomas's, huzzah, a toast to breakfast.
What's going on with Jesus, man?
With Jesus?
Yeah, what's going on with Jesus?
What do you mean? What is going on with Jesus? What did Jesus do?
Well, he did a lot for you.
Well, currently, what happened to Jesus? What happened?
You don't know what Jesus did for you?
God, why are you asking me what's up with Jesus? Let's go. Come on.
You don't know what Jesus did for you? That's crazy.
I did not say that.
That man got up on that cross, stretched out for you, and you're like, what did Jesus do? You didn't ask, what would he do? Like, as if Jesus ain't never done something. I can give you a list of things that Jesus did.
I could too.
Okay.
No, we're not.
Tell me your favorite things that Jesus did. Rank them. Rank your favorite things that Jesus did.
all the miracles.
I know, but like, what's your favorite miracle? You don't have to rank them all. I just want to know what your favorite miracle is.
What's my favorite miracle?
Yeah.
I mean, I would have to say him coming back from the dead.
That's your favorite one?
Well, it's got to be.
I know what your favorite one is.
It's got to be.
I know what your favorite one is.
What?
Your favorite one is water and the wine. That's how you get down. That's your favorite one, water and the wine. That's how you get down. You know what my favorite one is?
What?
The one with the fish.
I knew you were going to say the food.
Yeah. Because I always wonder, even as a kid, I used to get my little fat ass. I used to get so hungry. I was hungry, man. We'd be in class, in Sunday school or Wednesday night. We was going to church all the time. And they would be like, you know, Jesus took the fish and they made them be able to catch fish. What was it? Like they were trying to catch fish and then they had a little fish and then Jesus made them continue to catch fish. What was it?
Wasn't it two fish and the five disciples loaves of bread?
Jesus wanted disciples to feed a large crowd. They said it would be impossible, but a boy with them had five small loaves of bread and two fish. Jesus takes this gift, thanks God for it, and uses it to feed over 5,000 people.
Get your miracles right.
But Jesus fed the multitude with fish.
But you said they had fish, they couldn't get it. I'm like, that's not what happened.
But didn't he do something where he made people catch a bunch of fish? Jesus, Simon, Peter, and the miraculous catch of fish.
That's a different story.
Okay, so this is... So
which one is it?
This is the one I'm talking about where they caught all of these fish. Because I'm sitting in Sunday school and they're talking about catching the fish and I'm like, damn, how are they going to cook the fish? And I'm thinking about, like, they talking about how good Jesus is and I'm just thinking about the fish that Jesus caught. I'm thinking about them taking the fish and putting some Tonys on them, breading them, and dropping them in a light fry and then a little harder fry. You're taking out, you take the fin off that motherfucker. You boom, boom, boom. And I'm thinking about, I hope Jesus give me some fish. I could go for some fish right now. And then by the time it's like, Lathan, are you giving yourself to the Holy Ghost? I'm thinking about fish and loaves. So, because you take fish and you put it with some bread, some hot sauce, my nigga.
So that's what you were thinking about.
That's what I was thinking about.
In your
about.
Mind, that's the fish that was being passed around.
I'm like, what kind of fish?
Because you don't know it any other. Like, that's your favorite way to eat fish. I like that interpretation.
They could be in the River Jordan, or maybe they're in the Mediterranean. They got some of that good,
they weren't.
Clean. What is?
Wasn't this around the time that he preached the Beatitudes? Look, we are the worst.
Like, whatever. I don't know. I'm saying I want some
are
of that the, fish.
Blessed are this. Blessed are that.
Yeah. I will say this. I don't know what you're talking about.
I thought you were going to... You're trying to quiz me. Hey, you don't know what the Beatitudes...
No, I wasn't quizzing you.
You did. You don't know what the Beatitudes are?
Nah, it's not like...
Blessed are the poor in
spirit. The Beatitudes...
Blessed are the...
That seemed like a soul group from the 60s.
Honestly, it does. It does. And I never
heard that. The Beatitudes seemed like a soul group from the 60s.
Where's Luke? Was it Lucas who gave us a song? Lucas, give us a hit.
Give us a hit give from the Beatitudes.
Give us a hit from the Beatitudes.
I want King Willonius to do it. Shout out to King Willonius.
Matthew chapter 5.
Uh-huh.
That's your script.
Yeah.
That's it right there.
Give us the Beatitudes.
No, King Leonis. Is that his name? What's his name on social media?
King Leonis.
Willionis.
That's from 300. Leonidas, King Willonius.
He costs too much. His rate has gone up.
Oh yeah, because Metro. Yeah. Shout out to him, man. Metro looked out. Metro, the BBL Drizzy sample comes from one of our newest, most important geniuses, King Willonius. Give that man his due. Everybody rapping over it. Oh, shout out to Mads McFerrin. You know Bobby McFerrin's daughter? You know her?
Is that what you posted?
No, I didn't post her. I post somebody else.
Oh.
She cold talented. She sang over the BBS. She's so good.
I haven't seen it.
She's super cold talented. Bobby McFerrin's daughter. She great. She sing. Don't worry, be happy. Bobby McFerrin.
That used to be my favorite. Yeah, yes, I believe so. And that used to be my favorite song when I was a kid.
Biracial. One of the good ones though. No BBI case needed. All right, I'm saying what's wrong with Jesus is because Jesus seemed like his picker is off with who he got given the gospel. So this is a pastor named Keon Henderson.
This is where we were going.
Yeah, man. This is a pastor named Keon Henderson. He mean.
Wait, play the clip.
Keon Henderson is mean. He a mean preacher. No? Like, look.
You got to watch it and listen to it.
So, real quick, he is from the Lighthouse Church of Houston.
This was in Houston?
It looks like it. One of America's fastest growing churches, headquartered in Houston. And Keon Henderson is their leader. They got a big, huge congregation, 15,000 dedicated members, 900 unique weekly viewers across all social media platforms. He was delivering his word, trying to help people find the Holy Ghost, D-A, Holy Ghost. And listen to this. Listen to what he does. Check this out.
Hey. Yeah. Stop her. Hush, hush. Silence in the name of Jesus.
I lift my hands in tow.
The only voice I want heard is his.
Oh, praise.
It should be known that the pastor is the one singing as well. That's important to note. Man.
This is so wrong. This is so wrong, bro. Like, I'm serious, man. This is so wrong. No?
Like, oh, my gosh, yes.
This is so wrong. Y'all, just in a serious way, first of all, that is hysterical. Like, he's singing. Because, you know, it's funny when pastors, they can always half sing.
Yeah, they give you just a little bit. It's never a full song.
But they always sound half good. Like, pastors, when they sing, it's like, it's people in the church. A pastor can always carry a tune a little bit.
A little bit.
Almost.
They give you a little ad-libs here and there. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Start off the song.
Yeah. But it's always people in the choir that could blow. So, like, the level of singing for a pastor that we have is never, we never expect it to be. He just participated in a song, delivering the word. And so to hear him doing that, and then I hear her in the background.
Catching the Holy Ghost.
Y'all, let me be serious real quick. If you've never been to one of these churches, some of the testimonies that you would hear from people in the congregation are harrowing. Mm-hmm. What's brought them to Jesus, why they're there, how they've bottomed out in life. And when they start to feel the presence of God, to see what it does to people mentally, emotionally, physically, sometimes something overwhelms them and comes over them and they are emoting and expressing and delivering their pain out of their body. Mm-hmm. And it really means something to them. And to be told, shush, in that moment, he treated her with no compassion. He didn't walk over and put his arm around her and console and comfort her. Who knows what that woman is feeling and what she's going through. He said, shut up. In the name of God.
In the name of Jesus. Oh, I only want to hear his voice and then proceeds to sing.
Sing! They're singing the
song Total Praise, which is really just an outpour of praise. It's a beautiful, beautiful song. So I would imagine that she was overcome, whether it was with something that she was going through in a negative or a positive way. She had this outpour of emotion. The man walks 15 feet over. He doesn't do it just from where he's standing, you know, at the podium. He walks over to her, into the choir, snaps his finger and points at her and tells her to stop. This is what turns people off from church, because damn, this is a godlike mentality. And you see it happen a lot of times in big churches where the pastor starts acting like he is God. I mean, he says, be quiet in the name of Jesus and starts singing. Are you thinking you're the Jesus? Are you thinking you're the God-like figure? Everybody be quiet so I can have the stage and all attention can be on me so I can be heard.
Yeah.
Is basically what he's saying. Not listening to the words, not understanding the moment. As you said, not checking on her to see what she's going through. It was all about him and the spotlight was on him.
Yeah.
That is, it, this is such disgusting behavior. If I had witnessed this in church, I would immediately bounce.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't come back. I would know. I know everything I need to know about this pastor from this moment. This
everything?
Is this is outrageous.
I know. It's really, really terrible.
How do you go back? Because this is the most.
This is what I'm saying. I'll say this. This is terrible. I don't want to indict somebody over like one moment.
No. It says too much because he's also speaking in tongues at one point and comes out of that to tell her to be quiet.
Okay.
To me, this was such a self-serving moment, and this is who he represents.
Mm.
I have a feeling it's just not a one-time situation.
Mm-hmm.
It was mean.
Yeah.
He didn't even say, hey, somebody go check on that sister over there. She really seems like she's going through something.
Yeah.
He could have paused and said that. Instead, he said,
shut up.
The hell up in the name of Jesus.
He didn't say shut the hell up.
Hell was understood.
He
was understood.
I only want to hear his voice.
Was a fuck.
Right.
Shut the fuck up. Shut.
It is funny though. It is funny. The point that you just raised is the best point. And this be my problem with some of these preaches. Yeah. I've been telling you.
Pastor Carter would never.
This is my problem with some of these preaches. He said, I only want to hear his voice, the voice of God, and then proceeded to sing. I'm telling you, man, like there's some people out here that's out here doing work and trying to bring people closer to Jesus and stuff. But some people out here have started to think that they are God.
Charlatans in the mist.
That they are God. I'm not ready to call this man a charlatan.
I'm going to Houston at the end of the month. I might go and have a moment.
I'm not ready to call the man a charlatan. I'm not.
Maybe charlatan was too deep. But he did tell her to shut the fuck up.
He did. I'm supposed to be going to Houston.
When are you going? You at the end of the month too?
Yeah. Cry out. The Cry Out Conference.
All these conferences you're going to.
Yeah, Cry Out Experience is where I'm supposed to be going.
There.
Oh my God.
What happened? Blake, wait, what happened?
So I've been asked to take place in the Cry Out Experience.
Oh.
Which takes place in Houston, June 21st to 23rd. And I've committed. A friend asked me to go do this, bringing the best of Culture X and faith into the world. And the Cry Out Experience is created and led by visionary leader and Lighthouse Church pastor,
no!
Keon Henderson.
No! Man, no.
I swear.
No.
You think I'm bullshitting you? Look at the email.
What are you going to do?
Look at the email.
You can't go. Write her back.
I'm going. No, I already said I'm going.
Write it back.
I'm going.
Shh.
I'm going.
Man.
I'm going.
So that's June. So you're not going to be there in May. You're not there.
I'm not
going to
be there in May.
June.
I'm going in June. It's June 21st through 23rd. I've said I'm going to go and I'm going. And
I can't wait for the picture of the two of you together.
I mean, we'll discuss it. I don't know if I'm getting FaceTime with Keon Henderson, but I've been asked by a friend to go, and it seemed like something I would want to do, participation in this.
I'm sure it's great.
I'm going.
I'm not going to knock the conference or its location, but if you are you come across him.
That's
you
so
have,
crazy.
You have to ask him about this. You have to ask him.
That's so.
What really happened? Has he apologized? No. He said it was in the name of Jesus.
Yeah.
And that forgives everything. Like everything after everything's okay.
See what I'm saying? It's tough. Real quick, have you seen that the stock market thinks that Trump will lose?
Yeah, I saw something about that. But Lord knows I can't understand.
Do you think that Trump will win or lose?
Well, they're saying that he's going to win because they're saying Trump is losing because the economy is doing better. And usually when the economy is doing better under an incumbent, then that means that president is going to win.
Mm.
But inflation's still high. So I don't know. I don't know, Van. I don't know if he's going to win.
It says here that an analysis of the S&P 500 over the last 90 years reveals that in election years when the sitting president is reelected, economic growth is strong beforehand. By contrast, when the incumbent loses, America's biggest companies appear to be losing steam. So if you use the S&P 500 as a predictor, it seems to be saying that that Joe Biden will win the election. Have you been following the Trump trial? We're going to bring somebody on to talk about the Trump trial.
Not in depth, just headlines.
Do you feel like people are punting on this trial?
No, I just think that something's happening every day. I think there's just other things that are going on. Like for me, it's like, I'll see if there's something that I'm like, ooh, I really need to get into that. But other than that, I get the highlights.
Yeah.
You want to get into it. You want to bring somebody on.
I want to talk about some of the things that are being revealed in the trial. Like the testimony of Pecker, when he talks about literally how he protected Trump in a catch and kill fashion. How the National Enquirer, as much as we've been talking about election interference, mm-hmm. break this down.
Okay.
So I've heard the theory that Hunter Biden and the laptop story and the timing of the publishing or release of the laptop story amounted to election interference. Some people will say that, hey, the election wasn't interfered with through Dominion systems or through rigging of voting machines or anything that happened in Atlanta or anything like that. The interference came through the way that the media suppressed the Hunter Biden story and other stories and let these stories out only after the election. Boom, boom, boom. That's the interference that people are talking about. And you listen to that and you go, well, is that rigging an election? Is killing stories or controlling stories, the media is doing this, that might injure a candidate, robbing the American people of information that they might have used to determine who they wanted to vote for president, right? All right, cool. It's an intellectual argument that I don't know that I quite agree with, but it's an interesting one, right?
Sure.
If that's even true about the Hunter Biden story, which I'm not sure that's true in the way that people are saying that it's true. So Pecker gets up there, he testifies, and they talk about the ways in which the National Enquirer would catch stories that were damaging to Donald Trump, pay money to catch them, and then kill those stories. Mm. This is all coming out as a part of the Stormy Daniels situation up there, the hush money case and Michael Cohen and all of that stuff, also with another lady, Catherine McDougal, and Pecker, who runs the National Enquirer, who is the head of the conglomerate or whatever, is talking about the fact that they had an agreement with Trump to get these stories and then make sure that they went away, that they were essentially manipulating the media using a very recognizable media foundation or organization to keep bad shit about Trump from getting out there. So everyone who's made the case about Hunter Biden and the left-wing, quote-unquote, media's participation in what they feel like is the burying of that story or the suppression of that story, if you at all believe that that's a thing, you would have to, after this trial, apply the same standard to Donald Trump and to what went on and what people are testifying under oath as to what went on. I saw part of the testimony was after Trump was elected, they didn't think that this guy was going to be elected, that there was an email, a text communication between two of the guys like, oh my God, what have we done? Like, what did we do? So I think it's interesting to know the ins and outs of the case. Not that it's the most important of the cases against Trump. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting to see, to have as much knowledge as possible so you can actually poke holes in some of the narratives that people spin about how the media responds to Donald Trump. You hear this all the time. You hear people on the right say, hey, the media hates Donald Trump. The media hates this. And I'm not saying that he gets treated with kid gloves in the media. He's, you know, come out against the press enough for the media to hate him. But he had a very large media organization protecting him and helping him. And let me tell you, it wasn't the only one. I worked at one. That
you're saying TMZ protected him?
Yeah.
I don't think that's common knowledge.
Yes.
So a story would come in about Trump and they would kill it.
No, I'm talking about the fact that Harvey's relationship to Donald Trump made it, the Daily Beast has covered this, Harvey's relationship to Donald Trump made it to where there were several positive, several glowing, not glowing, but TMZ was very friendly and, I mean, how can I put this? They were a pro-Trump outlet. This is part of the falling out between Harvey and I. There was a show called Objectified that Harvey ended up doing. And it ran for a little while. Actually, not a half bad show for some of the shows that got produced over there, where he'd go through your house and he'd pick up an object and you'd tell him about that object. The first guest on that show was Donald Trump.
Mm.
And so there was, like, even inside the office, there were a bunch of people that were really uncomfortable with the way he was being covered. I'm not breaking any news here. People might not ever heard it from me.
Yeah, just might not have known.
But if you go look at articles and people that were covering it at the time, there was disdain about how TMZ was covering Donald Trump. And inside of the office, there was a lot of animus from people about the way Trump was being covered as well. It wasn't something that everybody was on board with. It really wasn't something that most people were on board with. There's really one guy on board with it who was Trump's friend. So when I see that and I see criticism of how the media covers Donald Trump or whatever, he has his allies in the media. And this trial is clearly articulating that. So whereas I don't think people are paying very much attention to it or as much attention as maybe they should be, they're bigger fish to fry in the world right now, obviously, there are some things inside of the trial that make it worth paying attention to.
All right, well, then we'll talk about it on the podcast.
You know what everybody should go do? Hold on, I'm a shout out a YouTube. Leah Miller. L-E-E-J-A Miller. All right, she has about 384 subscribers over on the YouTube. I go, and she's an ex-lawyer, and I go and I watch her YouTubes, and you know, a lot of times the stuff that I supplement from Trump comes from articles I get on Ground News and all that other stuff like that. But she does a little wrap-up about the trial, and it's very, very concise and well articulated. Leah Miller. She also does other stuff.
Is that who you want to come on?
Yeah, that's who I want to come on, if we can get her. So she also does other stuff. So, but she does stuff on the Trump trial, and it's great. Okay, you guys, we're going to have a conversation with the mayor of Baton Rouge in a second. Everybody chill out. Do your thing.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
So we promised you guys that we would talk about something that's happening near and dear to my hometown of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, which is the controversial starting of a new town, especially inside of Baton Rouge. Seems like white flight and some of the wealthy of the city taking advantage of their ability to move away from Baton Rouge. You know, I'm jumbling over my words, explaining. I have somebody on here who can talk to you and explain what's happening in Baton Rouge, Louisiana a lot better than I can. And it is the most important person in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, besides my mama and grandmama. It is Mayor Sharon Weston Broom, the Honorable, that we have on Higher Learning today to talk to us about St. George and what this means. Mayor, how are you today? Thank you for joining us.
I'm doing well. You know, the last time you were on my podcast, so it's, I'm so glad to be here to talk about a very important issue.
Okay, so I just did a very inartful job of describing what's happening down there. If someone were to ask you what was happening with the establishment of the city of St. George, what would be your answer?
I would say that we have a segment of our city that is has chosen to succeed, if you will, from our community, our city. And it's a long history. I will have to tell you that back in 2015, there was a desire to incorporate a section of our community. You described it well. It's a pretty affluent side of Baton Rouge, of our parish. As you know, we have the city parish form of government. We actually have a consolidated form of government. And so the organizers decided, we think we can do better. We can create our own destiny. And so in 2015, they redrew their lines, and their first attempt to incorporate failed. They came back to the drawing board, and it resulted in a city proposal with fewer Black and brown residents, 70% white and less than 15% Black. And so this initiative passed with a vote of 54% to 46%, and only 17,000 people voted out of 445,000 people in our parish.
Wow.
Mm. So what does this do to the economy in Baton Rouge? Because and I guess what was the motivating force behind it? Because what I've been seeing is, I guess, the people who were in favor of creating St. George were really blaming a lot of this on the schooling. Can you speak to that and then what that means for those federal dollars and how this affects the economy of Baton Rouge?
Absolutely. You're right. The origin of St. George can be traced back to their aspiration for an independent school system in, as I said, a predominantly white and affluent area. And so this aspiration that they had was against the backdrop, of course, as a long struggle with desegregation, which only ended in 2007. And so the subsequent efforts to establish St. George was connected to originally the desire to have their own school system. And when they came to the legislature, and I was a part of the legislature then, when they wanted to establish a new school system, a separate school system, of course, I did not support that. And so they then went to develop a city with the belief that if we have a city, then we can now have a new school system. So one of the issues, and you talked about the financial ramifications, of course, we recognize that a number of big businesses actually who were in the carved out area of the new proposed city have already annexed into the city of Baton Rouge. So they will not have that as a tax base. For example, the Mall of Louisiana is annexed into the city of Baton Rouge. I believe Women's Hospital has annexed. And so we've had a number of the big businesses that were out there that said, listen, we still want to be a part of Baton Rouge. So before the ball started to roll, they annexed into the city of Baton Rouge. So when you think about it, we have to get to the negotiation table and talk about, okay, what do you still want the city parish of Baton Rouge, East Baton Rouge Parish, to do for you? And what are you planning to do on your own? And so there will be a lot of negotiation that will take place. Now, I have to say this. I was removed, and this is important. We started this litigation back in 2019, and the litigation was not to say this election didn't happen. The litigation was, show me, as the leader of this city, how you're going to establish a city back then of 70 plus thousand, now 86,000. Show me a plan of action. There was a state statute that said you had to show a plan of action to establish a city like that. So when they didn't have a plan, then I served as a litigant. We filed a suit. One of my council members filed, joined us in the suit, and we won on every level. We won at the district court level, and it was a matter of them not being able to establish a sound plan, especially a sound financial plan. We won at the appellate court level. At the appellate court level, they removed me as a litigant and they left the council member. Then we went to the, we had won at every level, but they kept appealing. So then they appealed to the Louisiana Supreme Court. And by the way, I was there every step of the way. I was in every hearing that took place. And when we got to the Supreme Court just recently went beyond what the district and appellate court did and said, yes, they can establish a city. But it's important to note that they did that with a vote of 4-3.
Well, I didn't know that it was going down Bluebonnet. The St. George, where is it at, Mayor? I mean, this might be a little bit too inside Baton Rouge for people, but where is it at, Mayor? It's down Bluebonnet? I thought it was a little bit further south.
Well, it's south, but it includes that area. There is certainly a map that shows it, but if you can, you know where I'm going to tell you some areas. Okay. Shenandoah.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know where the St. George Big Catholic Church is located.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, so all of that area. But what's interesting to note that there are some areas that were intentionally left out in when they drew the second map. Oh. Areas that you know like Gardere.
Where I'm from.
They left
Gardere out. Mayor, I wonder why.
See? Yes. Now you understand the concern.
So how much of this do you feel like is just straight up, Mayor, just driven by race? How much of this is driven by a socioeconomic intention to separate themselves from what is a predominantly Black city?
Well, I do think that there's an intersection of race, of power, and money that's involved in this. There are similar movements that are emerging and growing urban areas across the country, some right outside of Atlanta.
Buckhead.
And so here in Baton Rouge, and as someone from Baton Rouge, you've seen the transition that has taken place. The city of Baton Rouge is 53% Black, 37% white, and the parish of East Baton Rouge is 47% white and 43% Black. So you've seen the transition in the demographics that is taking place. I mean, for the past 8 years, I've been the first African-American woman elected as mayor president. Prior to me, you had the first African-American elected as mayor president in the person of Kip Holden. So you've seen the transition that has taken place in the demographics. And I have to tell you, in all sincerity, you know, my message has always been a message of we're better together. That is why I, you know, was very determined. Let's work this out. Let's cooperate. Let's build a community around shared goals and a shared vision that we have, whether you live in Shenandoah or whether you live in Scotlandville. And so, you know, it's always been that measure of that message, if you will, of staying together. And I am certainly still committed to serving everybody in the city and parish, no matter where you live. But you have to have that want, you have to have the will to want to be a part of the community. And so, you know, I'm going to keep working. We'll see what the end result will be with the last litigant in this case. But there's a lot of work to do.
It feels like segregation. And I don't know much about Baton Rouge. It feels like institutional racism, particularly when you're talking about the school system and how money will be allocated. I'm wondering if you guys are done fighting in court, and do you see this being challenged to an even higher court?
So I will tell you, the attorneys are within their 14-day period to ask for a rehearing at the Supreme Court. I'm told historically that, you know, rehearings don't happen as frequently at the Louisiana State Supreme Court, but this case may be one of those cases that will lead towards a rehearing. Then that could be several months before the process continues to go. I have heard, you know, some people who have talked about it, with the legal background, who have certainly talked about the potential of beyond this, looking at some other angles to try to solidify and keep our city and parish together. And so I'm going to, as I said, still represent everyone, but I remain committed to the fact that when you have a segment of your city that's has decided that they want to leave and not work to make your entire city and community better, it certainly is disheartening and very concerning. I want to advocate for a future where every citizen feels represented and everybody feels supported. And I do think that this incorporation of St. George is a call to action.
Last question for me, Mayor. It's two-parter. One is, if in fact St. George is able to continue on its current path right now, how do you feel that affects the city of Baton Rouge, the cohesion of the city? And number two, after that, what's the best case scenario for working with the community of St. George or of cooperation between Baton Rouge and St. George? If you say they don't have a hospital, they don't have the mall, there might be some other places that opt out, I would be willing to come home and not do business in St. George. but what would be the best case scenario if everything stayed the way it was? I guess that's my two questions. One, how does it affect Baton Rouge? And then if things continue on their current trajectory, what would be the best way to work with a new city?
Well, I will tell you that we have been, from a financial point of view, as the leader of the city and parish, we've been proactively thinking if this day would come. I believe that although we're estimating resources to that they would have a $50 million annually city parish impact in our services, which is about 20% to revenues that we collect, I still believe that we can and will succeed as the capital city of Baton Rouge. And, you know this, Van, we have other municipalities, not as big perhaps as this proposed city. We've got Zachary. We've got Central, we've got Baker.
Baker, yeah.
And so I have been distributing resources equitably, and I will do the same for the city of St. George. Once we get to the negotiation table and they say what they want to be responsible for, because they are certainly considering some privatization. And once they decide what they want to be responsible for, we'll negotiate. But we will move forward as a city and parish. That's my intent. My ultimate hope was that we could do it together.
Right. For sure.
Well, what else can we do to help, you know, from a distance here?
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I think it's very important. First of all, I can't say this enough. Elections matter, right?
Yes.
So what you might not see the connection between elections and St. George, but there is a connection if you unpack everything. Elections definitely matter. And we are at a situation now where we, you know, whether you're in the state legislature, whether you are in local government, it matters. The people who represent your interests matters. Not to digress, but, you know, right now we're in another situation where we were scheduled to have a new African-American congressional district. And that has been stopped by the Fifth Circuit Court. So elections matter. That's one way everyone can help, is to be cognizant of and informed about the issues that are taking place. The folks who live in this proposed city of St. George should not be dismissed, no matter what color they are. They should be included. They should be talked with. They should be communicated with, and they should be told the truth. Because one of the question marks that still is out there, if you live in that area, are your taxes going to go up? Mm-hmm. Perhaps.
Yeah.
Perhaps. It's highly likely. So that, you know, and you had some individuals who came to one of the first press conference. And I think some of them might not have been the signatories who signed that original petition, nor did they vote for it. And they had some legitimate concerns. And so once again, you have to remember that everybody didn't vote for this city to happen. So you've got some folks out there who have some legitimate concerns. But we just want to continue to keep the lines of communication open. I just want to continue to encourage everybody to remember that elections matter.
Mm. Mayor Broome, we really appreciate you taking some time to join us on Higher Learning. I continue to be involved and engaged in what's happening in Baton Rouge. And as always, I am at your beck and call. So whatever you need from me, please do not hesitate to let me know. We thank you for joining us on the podcast, and hope that, you know, for the continued growth and success of the city.
Thank you so much to both of you all. And we're going to keep pressing.
All right. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
All right. Look, thank you for joining us, Mayor Broome. It's a very important conversation. I'm anti-St. George.
You know anybody who lives in St. George?
Yep. Well, some people didn't have a choice.
Somebody in player proof?
Yeah, somebody in player proof lives in St. George, for sure.
Did they opt out? Did they try to vote?
They tried. This was somebody that would never, okay? But they live in St. George.
Did I meet them?
Yes.
It's time to move.
Might have to get out of St. George now. All right. We will continue to stay on that story. Also, we should say that as we are leaving, there has been a headline, and that headline is that Hamas says it has accepted a ceasefire proposal. We talked a little bit about it before. There were urges from the IDF for Palestinians to evacuate Rafah out of earlier, because there was going to be a ground invasion of Rafah. Now, if you know, Rafah is to the southern part of Gaza and is essentially the place that people evacuated to. So I'm not an expert. I don't know where else on in the geography of Gaza haven't pushed them south. Are they supposed to go? I don't know where they're supposed to go. I don't know if they're supposed to go back through what's already happened. If they can move even more southern. I know you start to get pushed up against borders then. I don't know what's available to them. I don't know where they're supposed to go. I don't know where they're supposed to go. Okay. Apparently, from what I've heard and seen, Rafah is the last salvo they believe that they need to in order to cripple Hamas or whatever the goal of everything is. But apparently Hamas has agreed to a ceasefire proposal, and it is now in Israel's hands about whether or not there's some dispute about whether or not what Israel will do next. Biden has connected with Netanyahu over the plan to go into Rafah. I mean, yeah, it's bad for Biden. He doesn't want it to happen. The death toll, which is already at around 35,000, is going to go up. This, according to the Gaza Health Ministry, is going to go up after this. But it just remains to be seen if any of that type of loss of life or destruction can be averted by some sort of 11th hour peace talk. Continue to watch that. Continue to be on that. We'll have more for you on that on the next podcast. But till now, remember to like, share, subscribe over on the YouTube. Grow and blow is what we're trying to do. Like that. Grow and blow. Grow and blow. Take the caps off and then I'll stop running around Vanity.
I'm Rachel Lamluzzi. Bye, guys.